Are you ready for the Low Blows Network? Every Wednesday on the Low Blows Network, the Low Blows team are at hand to break down, analyze, and make fun of all things pro wrestling. Hosted by former pro wrestler Rick Nash.
I think the only reasonable thing we can do now is turn John Cena heel.
Selfie with me, fucking dog.
Banned from Nigeria. I will be talking to the government tomorrow morning.
YouTube star Corporate King.
This elephant has four legs. Joe Ross has four legs. Joseph Stalin, if he had two more legs.
Bonesaw rips off his shirt, yeah? And says, Chuck your law, big dirty tri-player.
And the queen of Irish wrestling, Katie Harvey.
I won't watch the sign, just CM
I'm
Punk.
I'm so embarrassed. CM Punk.
It's Low Blows. Bravo!
Mandalorian star and former MMA fighter Gina Carano found herself released from her contract with Disney despite seeing being fairly central to one future Star Wars spin-off project coming up on Disney Plus. This came after social media posts compared treatment of Republicans today to that of Nazi Germany, which is just a tough look for my gal. Gina, not the best look you want to be having. So she's gone. She doesn't exist anymore. She's now got a new job on a Republican network TV show where they show unwoke culture or whatever it is, which is just the dregs of society now. She's been relegated to from being on the biggest TV show on the planet. What a spectacular fuck up. But as we get kicked off here on a special Lads, Lads, Lads edition of Low Blows, Rick Nash and Dom Tuck here. Dom, who in wrestling would you like to see get Carano'd for their views?
See, this is a discovery I made during the week. I was absolutely betrayed. Betrayed, I tell you. Because I just finished Better Call Saul. And as you know, I absolutely loved it. All five seasons of it, absolutely brilliant. But this is coming from a huge, huge Breaking Bad fan, okay? Yeah. So, as you know, our co-host, Katie Harvey, she's watching The Walking Dead. She's on season 10 at the moment. And she's proper obsessed with it. So I message her one day this week and I say, you know what? I know you're watching The Walking Dead right now. You're nearly finished. But I think I know something that might fill the void once you're finished it. And I said, if you like Breaking Bad, you would absolutely love Better Call Saul. Then she goes, to be perfectly honest, I didn't even like Breaking Bad, even though I watched all five seasons of it. So I blocked her on all social media and then I was just snapping for the entire week. I hope she never hosts here again.
That's so why Katie is here today. Like, Dom has used his newfound political power in Low Blows as like a person who has his own show to get Katie Harvey removed from the airwaves. I didn't think you were going to bring it up on air. Yeah, like, it's fair enough to have your opinion. I didn't think you were going to bring it up on air, but like you did, and we're here. So I guess we're saying it. Katie Harvey, you're fired.
That's me for today. I'm going off.
What? Like, no, you can't get someone sacked and then just leave yourself. Like, that's not okay. No, Katie hasn't been fired. Katie is actually, she's got a family birthday this week and she will continue to have important family functions until you forget about her because she really is fired. Corporate Keane as well is away on his Wednesday inconvenient college course. It's just me and Dom this week. For me, I'd like to see Austin Aries get Carano'd. I think partly he already has kind of, but he has the wrong opinion on everything. And he's just that guy who's like, I'm just saying what the people are thinking. No, like, are you reading your mentions? The entire, like, people are calling you a fucking idiot. Like, if you're saying what your friend Doug thinks, you know what I mean? Then maybe that's it. But like, no, you're not saying what the people are thinking. People are calling you a fucking asshole. That's what the people are thinking, Austin Aries. So please fuck off. And as well, like, he is actually someone who's comparable to Gina Carano, because this is someone who
when he was on commentary on 205 Live a couple of years ago, you're like, this guy's got a big career. And then like he had that WrestleMania feud where like he turned babyface and people were really into it. And you looked at him like, this is a person who I would have never picked it, but has probably a career in WWE lined up, just like Gina Carano had fluked her way into The Mandalorian. This sky's the limit. And now it's just nothing. So I guess he already has got Carano. So I guess our only target, Dom, is just if we can get Katie Harvey cancelled, then we're absolutely laughing.
Nice.
Let's do this. See,
that thing you're saying about Austin Aries, though, it's so heartbreaking because I was such a huge, huge fan of him. Like, when I wasn't watching TNA, I heard that he won the title. And, like, I'd seen bits of him, and I was just like, this lad's deadly. So when he won the title, I started tuning in, and I was really, really invested. Then when he went to WWE, I was like, oh, my God, the sky's the limit for this guy. Then the feud with Neville, like you were saying, like, I was so into that. But, like you said, he's just a fucking idiot, so.
There's that. Then he went and spoiled it all by tweeting. It's actually kind of fitting that it's just me and yourself here today, Dom, because it's kind of been Rick and Dom week here on the Loblos Network. Of course, I did a special episode of Nash. Hope nobody took offense by the title. It was a bit headline grabbing and clickbaity when I said why wrestling fans aren't your friends. That isn't mean to say that I don't think we're friends. You know what I mean? If we're mates, don't use it to question it either. Like, you know, that wasn't the point I was making.
You really don't know your target audience here.
It was more just the thing that I was like, I think this would be good for wrestlers to hear, kind of like younger wrestlers coming in and dealing with fans for the first time and stuff like that. And then I was like, I may as well put it out as a podcast. Maybe other people might get into it if they do podcasts or anything. Check that out. A bite-sized episode of Nash came out on Tuesday. Dom as well, you had a big week. Great interview with Owen Richards. Who knew he had 2 hours worth of an interview in him, and it felt like he's only getting started.
Yeah, I kind of knew going in that he would be a really good interview because, like, he's great to have, like, in car journeys and stuff like that. And, like, he was mentioning this already. He works in sales and stuff. So, like, he knows how to talk and talk well. So, like, I really, really enjoyed it. And some of the stories, like, I was talking to you about this, but with your man, CJ Summers, like, that story, like, Jesus Christ. But I won't spoil it on here. So go check it out if you haven't already. I really enjoyed it. Debbie Keitel will be my next guest. I'm looking forward to that.
Oh, that is a big get. Oh, the Woe Queen, Dom. It's just getting bigger and better. I love what you're doing there. Fantastic stuff. Do listen to the Owen Richards, but we won't get into his story, but I can tell my CJ Summer story. So, like, I would have been an Irish whip around that time, and I similarly disliked CJ Summers. Although I was thinking, listening to Richie's story, I hope I wasn't one of those people that was laughing at him.
Were you?
I'd feel really bad. I don't remember that happening, so I don't think
I was. Is
that
something you do?
Like, yeah, well, I don't know. Like, it could have been funny. Who knew? It wasn't funny for him, but maybe it was like a funny scene for everyone else. I don't know. I don't think I would laugh at that, but who knows? But CJ Summers, and I'm not looking dump on the guy. Like, you know, he's, I don't know what he's doing, but he's certainly not like wrestling on WWE. So, you know, there's no harm in it. Like, but CJ Summers was someone who advertised himself as he was on the he was like on the 2003 PWI 500. Jesus. This is not like the PWI 500, because there's so much wrestling and on demand these days and this and that. There is actually 500 wrestlers you could probably name if you tried hard enough. Then you couldn't. You know what I mean? They literally, the PWI 500 back in those days was known for wrestlers 300 to 500 being made up wrestlers. And he was in the 400s. So put it that way. He was probably behind some people who didn't exist. But either way, he flew himself in and came over. And like, we were so young in wrestling at that stage. It was literally only getting started in Ireland that we were like, he's American. He's got to be good. And then he came over anyway and like started taking classes in the school. And the classes weren't great, like, to be honest. We didn't have much luck with teachers for a certain period. And like, we had Sheamus teaching us, but Sheamus was still learning himself. So he wasn't a great coach. He'll probably say it himself these days. It's not a dig at Sheamus, but he wasn't a great coach. But even he was a lot better than kind of what we were getting. So we're like, I don't know about this. And he was soon taken away from the school. But then once when we were on tour, there was I won't name names, but there was a women's wrestler from the same scene as him. And he had talked up. He's like, guys, if you ever come over, I'll get you booked here and I'll get you booked here and here. And then like the girl who came over, who was a well-known like women's wrestler on the sea from the same scene, just turned around to us in the quiet one day and was like, I've never seen that man before in my life. Which, if you think of wrestling, it's quite odd because it's the same, it'd be the same there as over here. Like, it's a small scene, everyone knows each other. So it'd be like if someone just came out, like, I suppose it's he was, and this isn't a, like, obviously they've gone in very separate directions, but I suppose it was almost like when Andy Steele joined the Irish wrestling and then we're like, who's that guy, he's really good, except CJ wasn't good. It was like kind of the opposite in that way, and their career paths have gone and diverging paths as such. That's CJ, so check it out for the full story. Very good interview. Keep up the good work there, Dom. We've got a problem here. I'm just going to introduce the next segment. I'm sure if you thought about it long enough, you could figure out the problem for yourself, because ladies and gentlemen, I don't know how we're going to do this. I literally don't, because I can't get out of
I just don't do it then.
I can't get out of the, there we go. Ladies and gentlemen, we're going to get to it, because we'll figure it out on the fly, because it's time for
Queen versus King.
Queen versus King. You're probably realizing my dilemma right now. It's Queen versus King in a show where King isn't here and the Queen isn't here. So it's an interesting one. It's an interesting one. So what we've decided is, as funny as it would be to award points based on Queen versus King this week, it's not exactly fair to either of them. So we're not going to make this 4 points, but we are going to continue, because this is how we discuss the Wrestling Week's news. So what we're going to do is we're going to have you guys in the Zoom chat be the judges, if you will. We'll switch it up between you, and we'll give you a question each. So for example, Sean, you can be the judge for the first question, then we'll go to Jimmy and Dan and so on and so forth. So like, what we're going to do is it's going to be me versus Dom. I'm going to read the news story. Dom is going to give his opinion. I'm going to give my counterpoint. And then Sean, you're going to be the first judge. And we'll go from there, and you guys can be the judge. So whoever you write in the chat gets the point, and we shall see how it goes. First story anyway, Triple H last week told media that nothing has changed with Velveteen Dream in NXT. He is still training in the Performance Center, and he is still very much on the roster. There's been no change to his situation. Obviously a delicate one, but Dom, at this stage, what do you think WWE should do with Velveteen Dream?
Just give him the boot, because like, people have been fired for less, and like, I've seen so many different stories with Velveteen Dream, and like, he's like the top case where people are saying like, oh yeah, hashtag fire Velveteen Dream, like people hijacking the Thunderdome and stuff. It is not a good look for WWE. Like, people have been fired for less. I don't see why it's worth keeping this lad on. Like, even if the accusations turn out to be false, like, they could bring him back if that turns out to be the case. But I just don't think it's worth keeping him at the moment. It's just such a bad, bad look for the WWE.
It's a tough one. And morally, I'd be on your side. But I think more of it as, like, from a management standpoint, that they're in an awful spot. Because if they don't sack him and continue to at least just have him train but not on TV, he can't turn around and sue them at a later date and say he was wrongfully dismissed. This is an awkward case, because I believe kind of the accusations, that the evidence there is, like, when multiple people come out and say the same thing, it becomes more credible. Although we can't know for sure, and I don't want to say that like they're true or imply that. But regardless of that, they're in a tough spot where I think they just have to be like, right, okay, we're going to just not use you on TV because you're under no obligation, but we can't sack you because you can sue us, because this can't be proven because they haven't taken it to court. And then maybe he'll end up leaving at one stage and going, look, well, my wrestling career is going down the toilet. I might try and make it on the indies. So I think that's, it's not so much what they should do, but it's the only thing that they can do in a very tough situation. And kind of, I'd say they probably prefer, if it's true that the victims took it to the police. And I'm not saying that they should. I'm not telling a victim what to do or anything like that. I'm just saying that's the position that they're in, unfortunately. So I think the thing they're doing right now is the only thing that they can do. That's my take. Sean, I leave it in your hands. You're the judge for this. Don't worry. No pressure. But I am in charge of the chat if you don't give me the point. So it's up to you, whichever way you want to vote. Both great points from my gut says Dom. Sean has been removed from the Low Blows chat room.
Brendan's for life.
Dom leading 1-0. Next up on the agenda, NXT star. We'll stick with NXT because the week that's in it. Casey Catanzaro is taking a lot of stick on social media after posting a video on her Instagram story of her at a bar with a group of friends all unmasked. She has posted a video since saying regulations stated she was allowed to unmask it the table and apologizing for any inconvenience caused. Is this harsh, Dom, or is this deserved, the abuse she's getting?
I don't think the level of abuse she's getting is deserved. Like, I think it's a bit overboard. Like, people are constantly harassing her and stuff, but I do think it was a stupid thing to do. Like, even if it was, like, I'm not sure about the regulations and stuff over there, but even if she did stick to them, I don't think it was a good idea posting the video, because you have so many people stuck in lockdown that are going to be bitter and angry towards this, seeing like a group of, like, I don't know how many people just unmasked at a table at a New Year's Eve party. Like, I just, like, it just wasn't a good idea, but the level she's getting, I think, is far too much, in my opinion.
Yeah, again, a fair point to that I can't really argue that much with, but I will. So I'd say that this is, it's ridiculous, the abuse she's getting, because a lot of it is getting very personal. Like, she put up a picture, like, basically just like a general picture that, like, you know, people have put up on social media of her looking attractive, and then like people were quote tweeting it going, you'd look more attractive with a mask on, and making it very personal and about her looks. And here's the reality though, like, again, what people are angry with are the regulations, because she was following the regulations. And guess what? They were the same regulations that Ireland had before Christmas, where you could sit in a mask with people unmasked. I think it was a stupid move on her part, given that she's in the public eye and this is going to be the opinion the public have. But again, what people are angry with here aren't, like, Casey didn't make the rules. Like, be angry with the people you're supposed to be angry at and stop abusing a young woman who made a mistake. I don't think Casey's a bad person. I don't see any evidence that she's an anti-masker or anything of that. I don't see any evidence that she's just maybe a bit young and naive and made a mistake. She definitely does not deserve abuse for that. Jimmy, we're going to put it up to you. And remember that if you say, again, like, I'm just saying, like, if you say that I don't get the points, then you're saying a young woman should be abused. So, Jimmy, what's your own thoughts on this? You're the judge.
That's not what I'm saying.
Well, you were going against me, Dom, is all I'm saying. Like, so Jimmy, it's, do you think young women should be abused or don't you? Like, Rick or Dom? It's a very simple, straightforward choice. Jimmy says, as someone who followed the regulations before Christmas to visit the pub, but would be careful otherwise, think Rick here. There we go, Dom. Like, it's just, yeah, I think the picking the I think you should abuse young women stance was a risky one, and it didn't pay off this time. But look, sure, we'll mosey on anyway.
Sure, take what you want from that.
Question three. That's going to be the quote from the show, by the way. Finn Balor last week said he'd only be interested in doing an NXT championship match at Mania if it didn't harm a takeover card on that weekend. Well, it's an admirable attitude, and something it's also something that he wouldn't decide himself either way. But in your opinion, would Balor be mental to even think of turning down a Mania payday for the integrity of the WWE brand?
Yeah, like, it's not even about the payday for me. Just think of how much bigger WrestleMania would be. Like, two nights of WrestleMania with an NXT title match. And think of it this way as well. Like, do people remember what the NXT takeover before Mania main event was, like, 2 or 3 years ago? Like, after about a year or two, I just forget what the main events were. But with WrestleMania, like, you remember years and years later. And especially with Finn Balor, like, he can do two nights that weekend and he'd be grand. Like, he did like 25 minutes against Pete Dunne in a really hard hitting match. Like, he's the man for the job. Like, that's what I think.
I agree. I agree with what you're saying. To me as well, though, what he's not looking at here is, and you make a great point, but what he's not looking at here is, like, first off, the integrity of the WWE brand. This is the same brand that, like, you know, burned a man alive and has Alexa basically pretend to be a 12-year-old Halloween costumed person. You know what I mean? It's not, this is the same brand that had, like, live corpse sex on television. Even NXT, you know, it can't really turn around and say that it's the special brand. Like, when you have, like, a high profile performer whose gimmick is basically going, oh, 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 and behaving like a child. Take the money, Finn. This is, you've got a limited window. So, like, do not be turning down WrestleMania paydays. You've already missed one last year. This is your window. You've done all the good work in terms of the street cred that you wanted to bring. You're still going to be cool even if you're on WrestleMania. So you're not losing anything. You're just doing yourself out of good, like, memories, good money, good opportunities, and kind of all the good stuff. I think it would be foolish. Dan, you're on the clock for this one. You're the judge. Rick or Dom, who do you think? I'm not going to threaten you this time, but I'm just saying I will kick you out of the chat. Dan, you're up. Take the Mania payday, not getting younger, and what's the point of being in WWE if you don't want the WrestleMania moment? Rick. There we go. Right, Dom, I'm not saying that intimidation works, but... Look, we're back with Sean anyway. Sean, I'm gonna throw it back to you now, and you voted for Dom already. So who knows? There still could be a turnaround. 2-1 to me so far. Cody Rhodes said last week in an interview with the New York Post that he never ruled out the possibility of a crossover with WWE, similar to what AEW are currently doing with New Japan and Impact. Dom, on a scale of 1 to 10, how likely do you see this is actually happening?
I'd say 4. But not while Vince McMahon is in charge. Not a chance. Like, this has Triple H written all over it. Like, with the stuff Triple H has done with, like, NXT and hiring all these different people, like Finn Balor, Kevin Owens, Hideo Itami and stuff like that. Like, I can definitely see this being on Triple H's horizon. But Vince McMahon is just far too stubborn, in my opinion. So I'm going to say 4, because, like, when we get to the point that Vince is no longer in power, like, will AEW still be as big it is now? Like, we don't know. Like, we won't know until, like, a few years down the line. So we'll have to just wait and see.
Interesting points. Yeah, I hadn't thought about it from that standpoint. I'm still going to go -17. For this is not going to happen. What this is, and the reason it's not going to happen is, first off, they say they aren't, but then they make hypocrites of themselves every week on television. They say, oh, we're not competing with WWE. Then they make a show where, as recently as 2 weeks ago, Rusev was in the ring going, how shit was it when I was in WWE, huh? Like, you talk about how shit WWE are all the time. If I could think of one reason for your existence, it's a bunch of wrestlers who want to prove they're better than they were in WWE. Cody, Moxley, you've got, like, Rusev, we just spoke about him, Jericho. Like, that's what AEW is for the most part. It'd defeat the purpose. I think what Cody's doing here is a bit of political gamesmanship. He's going out and he's going to say... basically, we tried to work with them. And if you don't see a crossover... I said it in publicly that I'd work with them. I think that's all he is. And it's childish and ridiculous. And it's kind of the same thing you're used to seeing from AEW. He's just trying to, like, get headlines and make it sound interesting. I don't put any weight in it. Sean, you're up. Are you going to continue to side with Dom, or are you going to continue to stay in the chat? It's up to you. Completely your call. Freedom of choice here. Rick made a better point, but I like a shootout. Dom, you're still in it. Come on, Sean. Even with, you've got Sean on your side. Question 5. We'll go Jimmy for this one. 58-year-old Keiji Muto, the man behind the legendary Great Muta gimmick, last weekend defeated Go Shizaki at Pro Wrestling Noah's Destination 2021 show to end the latter's 405-day reign as GHC Heavyweight Champion. It's been criticized by many as a desperation move, but does it make you more or less likely to keep one eye on Pro Wrestling Noah now?
No, I haven't a breeze about Noah, but I'll tell you one thing. He is not the man behind the Great Muta gimmick. Do you want to know who is the man behind the Great Muta gimmick?
Who?
Martin Steers. There we go.
Is that it? It's just dropping that bombshell and with no explanation, though.
Yep.
Okay. Well, it looks. You've arguably made chicken salad out of chicken shit there, Dom. I really respect that. It's tough to follow. Okay. For me, this is desperate, unfortunately. And Jun Akiyama, who's one of my favorite wrestlers, like legit top 10. Was also, he's in his 50s and he was made a champion in DDT at the weekend. I think this is just them doing stuff during a pandemic, trying to stay relevant. I'm not going to watch pro wrestling now because of this, because I've seen the great Muta in the likes of AEW and he's an older wrestler. Like, he's not, like, again, I've seen no reason that he has gas left in the tank, and they haven't sold me on this. So it just comes across as desperate and stunned. I'm not interested. So this, Dom, you made this very interesting. You're well in the mix. Jimmy, you get to decide here.
I shouldn't be revealing this, but I'm doing it for you.
It's wide open, Jimmy. It's all on you. You're the judge for this one. It's Dom. True bombs will always win out. Dom, even with the intimidation, you've defied the odds. Absolutely amazing work. Congratulations. Look, I have to hand it to you.
Leaking information goes a long way.
That's it. When all else fails, just like out one of your mates. That's it. It's the true secret. Anyway, guys, time to talk about the in-ring, the good and the bad, starting with the bad as always, because it's time for
Say something stupid.
Worst moments of the weeks. In at number five, we are starting with NXT Vengeance Day.
Right. So we'll get to the good from NXT Vengeance Day, and trust me, there was a lot from it, but obviously, this took place on Valentine's Day, and as a single bloke, I wasn't expecting to have my heart broken on Valentine's Day, but NXT somehow did it, because after the Pete Dunne and Finn Balor match, which was an absolutely phenomenal match, but again, we'll get to that later, We had only Lorcan and Danny Burch run out. There's a bit of a beatdown, but then the Undisputed Era run out, as in Kyle O'Reilly and Roderick Strong and Adam Cole. They come out, make the save, they stand strong with Finn Balor. There's four of them in the ring. But then Adam Cole super kicks Finn Balor. Immediately, I'm like, okay, that's okay, a bit uncalled for, but you know, I would be really into an Adam Cole Finn Balor match. But then, just as it looks like it's over, he super kicks Kyle O'Reilly and he effectively ends the Undisputed Era. Like, we don't know what the Undisputed Era is going to look like from now on. He's basically just split it in half. Like, Roderick Strong, like, what way is he going to go? But I can't even say anything more. Like, I'm just so, like, ever since Sunday, I've just been so depressed and sad, because the Undisputed Era are just no longer a thing. Like, they've been a staple of NXT for years now, and I was looking forward to seeing what they do on the main roster. Yeah. But that's not going to be a thing now, because Adam Cole decided to be a selfish bastard. Like, thanks,
it
Adam.
And I know we're kind of being a bit glib here, but like, in truth, yeah, it's sad because, yeah, like, we're only talking about it last week, where it's like, and it's going to be one of those things that I think that it was a great twist. It was a great storyline. And it was one of those, we haven't had one of those showstopper end of takeover moments in a while. So I think there needed to be one, because this was NXT's big, and we'll discuss it. This is NXT's big comeback going. We're still here and we're still very much relevant towards wrestling, and we can still be the best thing in wrestling. And part of what we love about NXT are these end of show twists, but like, I feel like I know what's going to happen from here. And if I'm wrong, I'll be disappointed. You know what I mean? I feel like it's going to be Adam Cole against Finn Balor for the NXT Championship. I think Finn's going to beat him. Like, I think that's the way it's going to go. There is interesting points. Like, whose side will Bobby Fish be on? Again, there's that too. Yeah. There are interesting points along the way. But I wanted to see the Undisputed Era open WWE myself. So I get it. There is legitimate. Like, by the end of this, we're going to guess... I'd say we'll probably be like, look, it happened exactly as we thought it would. Finn beat Cole for the belt, and then the storyline was over, or he feuded with Roderick Strong for a bit and Kyle O'Reilly and all. And that's kind of where it goes. Whereas I think it would have been an absolute wild card to have them just invade the main roster at one stage, Raw or SmackDown. So who knows? Dan says it was all a work to beat Balor. Oh, so maybe the rest of the Undisputed Era are going to turn. Oh,
that'd be interesting. Yeah, I'd love to see that.
Okay, you've won me back, Dan. I take back everything I've just said. If that happens, that's really cool. But then Kyle O'Reilly's going to be sick and he didn't get the belt. What if the rest of the lads side with Cole and that's the work side, but Kyle sides with Finn? I think that's a good way. Oh, look, see,
there's a lot of possibilities.
Yeah, this is not a bad moment. This has got us really excited now. Next up, a bit more egregious. Adam Pearce is a racist. In that number four from Raw, there was like basically the storyline for the Raw Elimination Chamber is it's all former WWE champions. And there was one clever bit where someone went up and is like, I'm a former champion. Or Braun went up to Adam Pearce and he's like, I'm a former champion. Adam Pearce is like, yeah, you're a former Universal champion. This is just for WWE champion. And I'm like, oh, I kind of like that. That's a nice little twist on it. But then at one stage, like Kofi Kingston, who's now back and active again, walked up to Adam Pearce and he's like, why wasn't I in the match? Like Miz held the belt like 4 years ago. Why am I not in the match? And Miz actually, and this is after Miz took himself out of the match, and Adam's like, still like, sorry, man, you weren't picked. And he's like, is there any particular reason? And it was just like, it was kind of like, you know, when like someone is like, you people, and it's just like, What people? What kind of people? It was one of those where it was awkward. And it's like, yeah, Adam, explain why Kofi wasn't in the match, because he's the most recent of a lot of these people. You're talking about putting John Morrison in the match. He's never held a world championship in WWE. What the fuck, Adam? It was just like, oh shit, I think they're telling us he's racist. I think that's now part of his character. And he's not a heel. He's like quite a likable babyface, if anything, but it's just awkward. It's like, it's Gina Carano. It's like, I didn't expect you to have these views, Adam, but I'm really disappointed in you. But it was very funny, I think, New Day putting him on the spot with an absolute nailed on point. And then Kofi ended up beating Miz, who was representing John Morrison. Because Miz actually had a very good point where he's like, I've got the Money in the Bank contract. Why would I go through an Elimination Chamber match? Why would I not just be fresh and then have the option of cashing in at the end of it? And took himself out of the match, but said to John Morrison to go in. Kofi and Miz ended up having a match. Kofi ended up winning, so he's in the Elimination Chamber. And yeah, he fucking deserves to be there when you look at it. But Adam Pearce, racism, tough luck for my guy. That's definitely going to say something stupid. In at number three. I want to talk about NXT from last week, the main show, not TakeOver. Over the past few months since I've started covering NXT, since the show came back, over the past month plus, I talked about there were certain characters that I felt I wanted to discuss that had mainly thrown me off NXT and kind of taken away a lot of its street cred that it won back and kind of has the world raving again after TakeOver, because I felt they were like childish bad characters. We've discussed Ciampa, we've discussed Shotzi Blackheart, and we've discussed Dexter Lumis since then. Now I'm getting to the final character on the list, because he made his return last week. I want to talk about Cameron Grimes. And I'm aware that Cameron Grimes is quite popular with people, and he has his own core fan base. I'm quite aware that Trevor Lee himself, the man behind the gimmick, is probably a very skilled wrestler. And part of people probably liked him on the indies. That's why they're supporting and going along with this gimmick. But this is not a good gimmick for me. So he made his return last week, and his new gimmick is that he's now a millionaire because he invested in GameStop stock. And it was very much WWE arriving to the topical point 2 to 3 weeks after it's become irrelevant. Do you know what I mean? He may as well have come out and been like, hey guys, I've invested in these new things, these Tamagotchis, am I right? It's just like, no, not cool anymore. WWE, you're not on the hub of, you're not on like centering in on like kind of society's talking points the way you think you are. My problem with Cameron Grimes is he's actually, it's not even like, some people are going to be like, well, it's heel heat. it's not actually, I actually appreciate Cameron Grimes in a way, because if you remember, I explained before that when I watch NXT, I watch it at the same time as AEW, and that can be quite difficult at times when there's two really interesting things happening. Whereas I appreciate when Cameron Grimes comes on the screen in NXT, because it makes my decision to watch AEW very easy. I just need to turn down the volume on one TV, turn it up on the other, and just ignore it until I don't see Cameron Grimes on my screen again. He's not good at what he does. Again, he's probably a great wrestler, but it's not, this character does not work. The problem with it is he just hams the entire time. And it's not in a funny or ironic way. Like, he walks around backstage and just kind of bumps, like jumps around and makes noise and shouts at people and screams at people. His character says nothing. There's no dimensions to it. There's nothing good. It's just like a kind of bumpkin character who's just yelling at people constantly and being annoying. It's like a trainee when they're like being a heel in a trainee match and they're just like going, "Shut up! Shut up! Shut up! Shut up!" But it's like, you don't know what else to say, do you? You're just doing general heady things you've seen on wrestling, aren't you? That's Cameron Grimes. His promos aren't entertaining because they're just shouting. There's one tone to his promos at all times. Like, he's just constantly like, "I'm Cameron Grimes and I'm crazy." And it's like, it's not even that interesting. Like, I feel like I sold myself doing a Cameron Grimes impression there more than actually watching him does. He's not good. I don't enjoy him. And just as NXT is coming in back into a very positive patch, And I was singing their praises last week. I was saying they were going into TakeOver in a very healthy place. And I was very happy with how TakeOver went, but it was disappointing to see one of the lowlights and one of the more childish, stupid, nonsensical characters that they have that has actually hurt the product and required it to need a rebuild be brought back. And it looks like he's going to be given a high profile program. So I doubt this is the last time you're going to hear me talk about Cameron Grimes. I don't know. Am I wrong, Dom? Am I missing something there? Because I know a lot of people are fans of Cameron.
I see your point, but I think he's gassed. Like, I think he's really, really good. I can't remember what the match was. I think it was a ladder match at one of the takeovers, like one of the earlier pandemic takeovers. I thought he was the MVP of that match. I think it was for the North American title. But I really liked it. I thought the segment was a genuinely funny segment. Then he had a little vignette on Sunday as well. Mm-hmm. I thought that was really good. But yeah, I wouldn't be the biggest fan of him, but I do find him entertaining.
Okay.
I see your point, though.
It could just be an entirely irrational dislike on my part. I'm ready to admit that. So by all means, like, people, if you disagree, if I'm missing something, I'm open to be convinced. Like, I've turned around a little bit on Ciampa since he's teamed up with Thatcher. So, like, I can be turned around and I can be won over. I'm not going to, you know, well, I'm going to turn the volume down on him a lot. But if anyone can give me a compelling reason to love Cameron Grimes, I will give him another shot. But it's not happening right now. Anyway, in at number two, let's talk about SmackDown.
All right, so we'll get to go to SmackDown again later. But there was just one moment that, like, I'm just so sick of it. Like, I'm so sick of it. Like, we talked about it last week and we're still talking about it this week. Like, that's how annoyed of it I am. Like, it's just going on and on. And, like, I'm talking about the Nia Jax My Hole joke. Like, when it first happened, like, I seen it on Twitter and, like, I seen a few of the memes and stuff made about it. And I was like, okay, that's quite funny. But it just dragged out and dragged out and dragged out until Friday, where they replayed the moment on the screen. And that's where I'm just like, no, like, if you have to replay that moment just because it got memed a few times, like, on SmackDown, on the other brand, then that's just too much for me. Like, they're just going to milk this to absolute death, aren't they? Like, it wasn't the most funny thing in the world in the first place. It was just a really out of character moment that people, like, caught up. Like, they, just, I'm so flustered just thinking about it. It's just so annoying at this stage. But, like, I should really expect it to be fair, because, like, they love milking these little jokes and memes and stuff like that. It's just, I'm just so sick of it. Like, why'd they replay a video of it?
They did it again on Raw, and they had, like, did. Lana and Naomi then cut a promo saying, I think that's the whole thing with Nia, and it's just really forced. It's like, what's the worst example of WWE taking a funny joke and like dancers that probably have shirts out soon? Yes, I agree. That probably will be the next thing. And Nia's like, am I right? Hole, the word hole is on this, and I said that word 19 weeks ago on Raw. Am I right? Like, yeah. What's the worst example of this, though? Do you remember Titus fell at the Greatest Royal Rumble? And then, like, for weeks afterwards, they had him do an entrance, and as he's walking towards the ring, he has to be like, whoa, 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 am I going to fall again?
They recreated it at the following year's Royal Rumble, I remember. Oh. He chased Hornswoggle, I think, under the ring, didn't he?
Oh, yeah, I'm willing to bet he did. I maybe mentally blocked it out, but yeah, it sounds legit. Like, there is a good, like, BuzzFeed list to be made on this. Like, seven times WWE milked the joke until it was absolutely dead, and we wished it never happened to begin with. But yeah, no, I absolutely agree. In at number one, though, not going to lie, guys. This one hurts. It's New Japan. And we all know I love myself a bit of New Japan. So it brings me no pleasure to tell you all that I was not a big fan of New Japan New Beginning in Hiroshima. I wasn't a big fan of the New Japan New Beginning shows in Hiroshima last week, Wednesday and Thursday. They were quite bad. And it's really frustrating because I spent so much time on this show trying to sell people. And I don't know, nobody said this to me, but like, I just think, what if one person ended up going, you know what, Rick sold me on this. I'm finally going to do it. I'm going to check out New Japan. I've got my New Japan World subscription. And then they chose that show to watch it. And it was really bad. It was not just a bad show, a silly, stupid, annoying, pointless pair of shows where there was very little redeeming qualities on any of it. Like, I'll spoil This Is Awesome. The only good thing on either show was Hiromu defending the IWGP Junior Heavyweight Championship against Sho. And even then, I don't have much to say to it. So we'll just skip that in This Is Awesome, because it was like, yeah, it was a good match. It was, but like, if I had anything else to talk about, I wouldn't be talking about this, because it wasn't a great match. It was just a fine match. But that gets points with how bad this show was. Both of them. And the problem with it was it felt like it was trying to be a really bad WWE copy show. You know what I mean? Like, they were doing so much crappy WWE tropes where it's like, you don't do this, New Japan, and I tell people to watch you because you don't do this. It was so frustrating. So, for example, there was just the entire match between Gorilla's Destiny and the Dangerous Techers was just filled with WWE style booking. It ended with like them getting the iron glove out and then like hitting them in front of the ref and getting disqualified. It was just silly and stupid with a lot of people who can wrestle a very perfectly good tag team match. I felt like just wrestling a normal match would have been better. I don't know why they needed to mix things up. Maybe they want to protect the rematch, but you can do like the iron glove finish. You don't have to have the entire match revolve around stupid cheating stuff, even if it is Bullet Club against Suzuki Gun. There are other ways to do it. It was shit, and the entire card was filled with that. I'm going to explain what happened, for example, with Okada against Evil. So at one stage, you had like, it began as a tag team match. It was Okada and Yano against Evil and Dick Togo, except the match ended instantly. It was a straight up DQ because Evil and Togo attacked them with weapons. It was a double count out. They attacked them with weapons and then they brawled around and then it was a double count out, and that was the end of the match. Okada did a hot babyface fire promo and was basically like, Evil, come back into the ring. I want a one-on-one match. Evil like, okay, yeah, let's do this. And then they built it up really well, where I'm like, okay, I'm actually getting into the booking because it seems like they've got a payoff coming. And it was a DQ within 5 minutes. Evil got DQ'd, and I'm just like, you're not making me want to see this match. For a start, Okada and Evil, it's not a great long blood feud that always has amazing matches. It's not like Okada and Omega or anything like that. It's they've grand matches. Like, they're not particularly, Evil's not a hot character now. He kind of had his moment in the sun last year. So they're, if anything, you just want to see him do new things. So it's not a great match. And it's just making me feel like every time they wrestle, you're going to annoy me. Like, you're literally training me to think that this is going to be annoying and it's not going to be an actual match. You're going to tease me and then you're going to bait and switch me with nothing. It was so stupid and so annoying because I wanted to like it. And every time I felt like I was just about to be into what they were going, even if it was like a clever bait and switch, I wouldn't have minded. Even if they just left at the double count out, I'd have been better. But it's like they got me excited for something, then immediately pulled the rug again. And it's just like, lads, like, if this show was more packed, then I'd be okay with this, but nothing is happening on this show. This is it. This is it for me. And it was really bad. And then you had a main event where it was a rematch of the G1 finals last year. Kota Ibushi putting the belts on the line against Sanada, which was most interesting for Zack Sabre Jr. being on commentary. And I want you to keep in mind when I describe this that New Japan have audiences in there. So there's clapping and there's atmosphere for matches like, because it's a normal show. The only difference is they're not allowed to shout out because that's just one COVID regulation. Even though they're all masked, they're not allowed to scream or anything. So they clap instead. So there's a lot of noise and atmosphere for a big match that people are looking forward to. And Zack Sabre Jr. was on commentary. And the reason it's notable that there was an audience there is because Zack Sabre Jr. randomly decided like he was going to call this match like a golf commentator. So he was essentially whispering into the microphone. He was like, Ibushi there, he's going for the leg and he's taking him down. He's got an interesting strategy here. But the problem is there's a crowd clapping over that. Like, that works in golf because everyone is silent and no one can hear. So it's like he hit it down the fairway. Lovely shot from Tiger. Lovely. Amazing stuff. Whereas Zack Sabre Jr. is like, okay, guys, we're going to be doing this. And it's very, it's just, I can't hear and understand what you're saying, Zach. Stop. Please stop. And then the entire story of the match was all the tour, Ibushi and Sanada had been teasing that there was going to be a time limit draw, and it's a 60-minute match. So you're like, holy shit, they're going to go for a 60-minute draw, which we haven't seen in New Japan since Okada and Omega, the rematch from their Wrestle Kingdom Classic. So I'm like, okay, or like they've probably been teasing it too much, but they're going to go like 40, 50 minutes. No, it was just a normal 20, 30 minute match. And Ibushi won in the end rather clean. It was worse than their G1. And I don't know why they were teasing a draw so much. I have no idea because it didn't even go particularly long. And then afterwards, Naito came out to challenge and said that he wants the Intercontinental Championship, but he doesn't want the Heavyweight Championship, which I get that you want to split them up, but there was no reason given for this. And I don't see why someone would be like, no, don't give me your better belt. Give me the worse one. It's like, what's the logic behind this? Like, I get you probably want to split the belts and you want an Intercontinental Championship. Fine, but create any motivation for this. Give me anything. It was really bad and I'm really upset. Now, they have a few shows coming up. They have the New Beginning USA show where they're going to have the Moxley-Kenta match. And there's a lot of cool stuff going on. And then they've got two Castle Attack shows. So these are all happening. The USA show is on Friday. And then Saturday and Sunday, they have the two Castle Attack shows. The second Castle Attack show looks really good, where there's just four title matches back to back. And I think that's what New Japan needs to do. There's three cards on this tour that should have been one big show. And if there was one big show, there was enough on it to be a good show. Like, not great, but good. Instead, it was spread out over three different nights. Whereas this one, there's one very good night. But if you're going to watch any of the New Japan shows next week, make it the Sunday show, Sunday morning, and then maybe check out Moxley and Kenta on the Friday night. The Saturday show is pretty missable. There's not big matches. It's headlined by, I think, Okada against Evil, and they're probably going to pull some shite. Really disappointing, especially considering I've gone to bat for them. But you look, we're here anyway. That's the bad from the week. I do need to cheer up. So we'll get talking about the good very shortly, ladies and gentlemen, because it is time for best moments of the week. This is awesome. Dom, I need cheering up. So let's talk about some good stuff. I suppose I'll get it started. We'll talk about Raw, and this one's real quick. So there's a story on Raw now where Lacey Evans is pregnant and whatever. Okay. I don't know where it's going to go. I'm not necessarily against this. Sometimes these absolute train wreck WWE stories can end up being entertaining, and there is reason to be positive about it. Because I'm not saying the storyline is good, still very much to be decided. But have you seen Ric Flair trying to dance to Lacey Evans' theme?
Yep.
I could watch that all day. Seriously, if someone made a supercut of that for 24 hours just on a loop, because if you haven't seen it, it's amazing. Because Ric Flair's like style and profile and dance does not go with 1, 2, I got your number, and I don't think, but like he tries, he commits to it. And what it looks like is a geriatric old man going absolutely insane. It looks like they've put Flair on crack and he's just like about to pass out any second because he's just dancing in super fast forward. It's just amazing because he's trying so hard to be in time. It is your drunk uncle at a wedding, but Flair is normally like that. It is your drunk uncle at a wedding on crack trying to dance in time to Lacey Evans' theme. That's what it is. It's absolutely amazing. And whatever about this storyline, as long as they keep having Flair do that, and as long as they don't like do a Nia on it and be like, hey, Flair going to dance to Lacey Evans' theme and make the joke old, I'm happy. And just let Flair be Flair. Very, very entertaining stuff. In at number four, let's talk about the good from SmackDown.
Yep. So another very, very solid SmackDown. First of all, I want to talk about the Roman Reigns and Adam Pearce segment. So Adam Pearce was talking about the Elimination Chamber and he wanted Roman Reigns to defend his title in the Elimination Chamber. And I loved how Roman Reigns was just like, nah. And then they had to change the stipulation and Paul Heyman was like, so Roman Reigns is not going to be defending the title in the Elimination Chamber, but he's going to defend the title after the Elimination Chamber against the winner. I love this just because you have this authority figure who's just scared shitless of Roman Reigns and Paul Heyman and Jey Uso. Like I've said it so many times, but this storyline just continues to be my favorite part of SmackDown. Like it's just every week it's just so good. And I like the direction they're going with the Elimination Chamber with Adam Pearce dropping the bombshell that Kevin Owens and Jey Uso are going to be in the match, which Roman Reigns didn't take too kindly to. So he squared up to them outside the ring and you can just tell Adam Pearce is just shitting himself. I loved it. So there were some tag team qualifier matches, I should say, announced for later in the show. So you had Otis and Gable versus the Street Profits as well. The Mysterios versus Corbin and Zayn and Bryan and Cesaro versus Dirty Dog. Sorry, those last two were the qualifier matches. You also had Rollins return and I love Seth Rollins. I know people have kind of gone off him. Like I did for a while, but he's still one of my favorites in the company. Like when he cashed in at Mania, it was one of my favorite moments of all time. So I was really happy to see him back. First of all, he came back to his old music, which I think is great because his new music is just it sounds the exact same as Bailey's. So like, yes. it's indistinguishable. Like, I don't know why they changed in the first place. Cause like when you think of Seth Rollins, you think of that music. Like it's the music he won countless championships with. Like he cashed in with that music. He won Money in the Bank with that music. Like why did he change it? Like, but I'm glad
they
that's
had,
back.
They had Bailey come out. I think she was after Rollins come back, and I'm like, oh, Rollins is back. I'm like, no, it's Bailey. I'm like, genuinely, I was like, why is Rollins back? Yeah, you've nailed it with that one.
Yeah. So the segment I actually liked it. I seen people like they weren't really a fan of it, but personally, I thought it was a really good segment. You had like all the wrestlers from SmackDown surrounding the ring while Seth Rollins cut a promo. Like he started with a real like heartfelt promo about like how parenthood and stuff changes your perspective on stuff. Easy for me to say. But as it went on, he just like did a 180 and he's still a heel, but he's not like the Friday Night Messiah or whatever he was. Like he's just Seth Rollins again. Like the
it's just the knob.
Yeah, he's just the snivelling heel Seth Rollins that we used to love. But I really liked how they did it where as soon as he did the 180, they like just everyone around the ring left except Cesaro. And then Rollins sees Cesaro and he's like, I knew it. I knew you would see the light. And then Cesaro is just like shrugging. He's like, oh no. like, why do I have to be the last one standing? But he slowly walks away, but then Rollins charges him and he starts to beat him down. Then Daniel Bryan comes in for the save. So I really like the segment and I like to see where they're going with it. That could be a WrestleMania match then, Rollins versus Cesaro. Like, ooh, that is a really, really good match. And if you're thinking about it as well, like, with the momentum Cesaro's getting, that would be a huge win, in my opinion. Especially if you have Rollins, like, just pick up momentum up until WrestleMania. So, like, that would be a WrestleMania match I would be personally into. So, we'll see what happens after the Chamber. But, yeah, like, I really enjoyed the segment. As for the rest of SmackDown, Street Profits versus... It was Otis and Gable versus Street Profits. Yeah, I mentioned this already. Very fun, entertaining match. I'm actually really into Otis and Gable as a tag team. When it first happened, I was like, oh, what are they doing to Chad Gable? But with their promos and stuff they're doing backstage, the what are they calling it? They're having, like, Gable teach Otis, like, all these different techniques and stuff. Like, it's all in the hips. It's really good. Another Chamber qualifier then was the Mysterios versus Corbin and Zayn. Like, they've had this feud with Baron Corbin for a while. Like, I'm not really too into it, but this tag match was really good because, like, Sami Zayn is just unbelievable. Like, I love Sami Zayn so much. So you had Corbin and Zayn win that one then, so they're going to the Chamber. And then you had in the main event, you had Bryan and Cesaro versus the Dirty Dogs, Dolph Ziggler and Robert Roode. And this was a really good main event as well. Like, Bryan and Cesaro was just a very intriguing tag team to me. Like, whenever they team up, I'm just invested. But as you expect as well, Bryan and Cesaro won that one. So they're two heavy favorites for the Chamber anyway, so we'll have to see where it goes. And you had a bit where Jey Uso comes in after the match, then Kevin Owens as well. So you have this Chamber build. It's building up really, really nicely. Like, I'm very, very hyped just from this one SmackDown alone. But yeah, a very solid SmackDown.
I like the Otis and Gable team as well. And I like when they have Daniel Bryan with them. And it shouldn't work, but it does. And it does because SmackDown has a looseness that you just don't see with Raw. Do you know what I mean? There's characters just seem to just have a tiny bit more freedom to mess and just have fun and enjoy their roles and just get to interact with each other with a looseness that you don't see on Raw. Because on Raw, it's very much, well, you're feuding with this person, so you'll only talk to people involved in this feud. You know what I mean? Whereas SmackDown is like, we're all in the locker room. Like, so, you know what I mean? Like, everyone has an opinion on Reigns. Everyone is kind of like feuding with him at the same time, but it's like, who does he pay attention to? And it feels like more of an actual workplace in the world. And when they interact, even when the tandems are random, it's like, well, I believe they're all hanging out and talking and chilling and, like, they'd make friends in the canteen. So you can put your own kayfabe on it, even if they don't, you know, and buy into it a bit more. I ended up staying up for SmackDown actually last week, like I was saying, I would. Probably wouldn't do it again. Not to do with SmackDown. I enjoyed this episode. I really liked the Rollins return as well. But it's just it's late and there's not a mad payoff. there need to be something. Like, I didn't mind doing it for NXT because I'm like, I'm watching amazing wrestling, so I'm fucking awake. Whereas, like, yeah, I'm in my 30s, I'm older, so it's me, not SmackDown. But I'm very much I'll watch it on Saturday morning when I'm nice and fresh and I'm in the mood for wrestling.
Saturday morning.
Yeah, and it's not, and it takes me back to being 12 again, watching wrestling on a Saturday morning. So, 100%.
Just got your point there about how everyone's kind of involved with each other on SmackDown. I love how Roman Reigns is just the epicenter of everything. Like, everything pretty much revolves around him, and it fits perfectly with the storyline. Like, I love how there's always mentions of him, like, from everyone.
Yeah.
It's really, really good.
He's the champ, and it's...
Like, that's how it should be.
Yeah, we're just not used to seeing that, but that's the way wrestling should be in theory. Like, it should be everyone revolving around the champ. Like,
I kind of used to always talk about Austin.
Yes, on Raw. Like, it'd be like, where's Steve? What's Steve going to do? Steve's coming up in the next break. Oh, no, he's not. Is Steve going to be on the break afterward? You know what I mean? Yeah. So, yeah, no, 100%. I agree. And it's all the better for it. Like, such simple stuff, but it works. SmackDown kicking ass yet again. In at number three is a hot take that is fresh out of the oven. And when I say fresh out of the oven, I mean, I finished watching this 10 minutes before we went on air. So how I feel about it, I guess we're going to find out. I watched the first episode of Young Rock because I wanted to talk about it on the show. If you don't know that much about it beyond just hearing bits, it's like the story of The Rock growing up as a child, and it's a sitcom comedy. But what makes it interesting for wrestling fans is it has famous wrestlers being portrayed in this. So Andre the Giant is a character, the Iron Sheik is a character, the Wild Samoans, and then you have The Rock's dad and his mom. And then they've got really good actors. They've got Randall Park, who's Jimmy Woo in WandaVision at the moment. And he's playing himself. And it's like, it's all the better for that because he's the same character as he is in WandaVision. Like, and he's got that real funny, genuinely funny, awkward comedy that gives you a few laughs. First impressions, I laughed genuinely a few times. It's not like, look, they say with comedies, you should give it 4 to 6 episodes anyway to kind of let the show settle in. And pilots are very hard to judge a comedy off because they have to set up the storyline and the world and everything. And then and only then does it really get to be funny. So they have to do a lot in a very short amount of time. And it's common where it doesn't all work. This works probably better than it should have. I'm not going to say it's the funniest thing ever. It's not the funniest show ever based off one episode. And it's not up there with like shows like Parks and Recreation, The Office, those kind of things. But then again, you'll also remember that they're shows that started slow, as is the way for comedies a lot of the time. I won't go into spoilers or anything, although it's The Rock's life. Spoiler, he becomes The Rock. It's funny. It's worth a watch. The characters are interesting. It doesn't shit on any of them. Is it a vanity project? Yes, it's a vanity project where someone is talking about themselves when they were a child while they're portraying themselves running for president and being universally beloved. Yes, that's a bit of a vanity project, but it's likable enough so far that it gets away with it. One thing I'll say is, I don't know if I'm going to watch it every week. I think I'm going to wait until the season ends and binge it because I don't think there's enough on a weekly basis to keep me coming back. But that's fine. I watch another show that's on at the moment. Today I literally got Young Sheldon and Young Rock ready to watch. Young Sheldon I watch the same way. I watch it in bunches of episodes because, again, one episode is kind of light and it's not groundbreaking comedy that I need to see every week to talk about because there's going to be memes everywhere. It's not that type of show. It's just very family-based, fun, likable comedy. But it's not bad. I'm not saying that as a criticism. It's worth your while going out of your way to check out. And I think, again, if you're to say, I don't think it's going to get six series or anything. It wouldn't surprise me if this was a one and done, whether it wants to be or not, because I don't see huge buzz about it yet. Although it was only released last night in America. So look, not bad, not awful, definitely not awful. And a lot of potential. It could get a lot better as time goes on. So interesting. Jimmy asks, how do you think Vince is at the guy? How pissed do you think Vince is at the guy playing Vince? If I was that guy, I'd turn down any WWE invite. Yeah, it's an interesting one. You haven't actually seen the Vince McMahon character yet, so I'm not sure sure how it comes across. But again, it's a show about these characters, so there is potential there. But not a complete loss, and a lot to be positive about. Good news from the first episode. If only to see Randall Park. I'd watch him read the phone book at this stage, so that's a big win for me. So yeah, there's a lot of potential there. In at number two, did you see much about with MJF last week on AEW?
Yes, it was good, really good.
This is excellent. I loved this. AEW wasn't massively remarkable last week, and I knew what we were going to be talking about TakeOver, so I was kind of paying more attention to AEW because I'm like, I'm probably going to end up speaking about it a bit more. And there wasn't that much good stuff to talk about, but the highs were high, as is usually the case with AEW. So the storyline of MJF setting up Sammy Guevara is really, really good. MJF is so good at playing a shit-eating character that you know is going to turn. You know what's going to happen.
Yeah.
A million miles off, but it's still entertaining to watch the story turns. I think back to his storyline with Cody that was told largely on being the Elite. It started on that, where he'd go to Cody's house and they'd pretend to be best friends. And Cody's like, he's such a good guy. Like, everyone's got him wrong. And then, like, Cody would fuck off into the other room and he'd leave him with the dog. He'd leave MJF with his dog. And MJF would be like, the fuck are you looking at, you stupid fucking dog? And then Cody would come in and he's like, everything okay? And he's like, I love your place. Your dog is so cute. And we know he's a piece of shit. And that's what's going on with the Inner Circle. We know exactly what's happening. I'm willing to put money down right now that Chris Jericho and Sammy Guevara are going to team with against MJF and the Inner Circle at a certain date. He's going to take over. And that's part of the storyline. Sammy Guevara's grudge with MJF is you're trying to take over the Inner Circle. They're just calling out the obviousness of the storyline, and it's so much better for it. So they had a segment this week where Sammy confronts MJF about all that's been going on and kind of phasing him out of the group and being a bit of a passive aggressive dickhead towards him. And MJF is basically just gaslighting him and going, it's all in your head, man. No, none of this is happening, even though it clearly is. And then Sammy at one stage, MJF is like, I know what your problem is. You want to take over the Inner Circle. You hate Chris Jericho. And Sammy sarcastically goes, yeah, that's it. I want to take over the Inner Circle. I hate Chris Jericho. And MJF picks up his phone that he's put down and he's like, that's exactly what I wanted to hear. And Sammy's like, you're recording me. And then throws the phone against the wall and punches MJF. And then later, MJF has a tag team match and they're doing a pre-match interview. And then MJF arrives to the interview late, like with ribs taped up after one punch, despite being a professional wrestler who's, I think, kicked out of thumbtacks before and is nearly unbeatable on AEW. But he's dramatically injured from this. And he's like, do you not see that Sammy punched me? And then after they win the tag match, they get on the mic. Sammy Guevara comes out and confronts them and said, Jericho, I told you one more time with this guy. If there's one more incident, I'm leaving the Inner Circle. So you know what? I'm out. And he just walks off. So Sammy has left the Inner Circle now. And then MJF is kind of slyly smiling on the side while Jericho is looking very shocked and upset. So I think it's going to be Jericho next. But I'm interested, whatever way it pans out, they've got MJF and Jericho facing the Young Bucks for the tag titles. That's something to watch because, again, it's AEW. So they could drag this out for six more months or MJF could turn on him at Revolution. Either way, they have me hook, line, and sinker for this. What's your thoughts? This for me is the highlight of AEW. What would you say yourself? Like,
I kind of skipped through AEW, but this stuff, like, I watched it, like, I was proper concentrating when I was watching it. Like, it wasn't really a memorable show apart from this stuff. Like, the segment backstage was really good, and then, like you were saying yourself, when he did leave, like, I love how he was just blunt about it as well. He just came out and said, "I quit." Like, there was no elaborate like ruse or anything behind it. It was just like, I quit, that's it. Like,
yeah, I like, I told you I quit and now I'm quitting.
Yeah.
It's just like, okay,
just, well, being honest.
Yeah, you mean what you say. And it's a really good way, that's a really good way of turning babyface, where it's just like someone says they're going to do something and they do it, so people are like, that's a man with integrity.
People are ready for Guevara as a face as well.
Yeah
Big time.
Yeah, which is great work by him, because you think of where he's been over the past year, you know, the controversies he's been involved in and stuff like that. And the fact that it's a testament to the strength of his actual, like, work on TV, that even then people are forgetting that and just like, yeah, give it to me. And I'm in the same boat. I'm like, yeah, this is, I'm all up for this. And I want to see where he can
go. That Inner Circle tag match where it was just like the four of them, like, wrestling each other. Like, he was the standout of that match when it was him and Hager teaming up against the rest of them.
He can do mad shit. Like, he can do, like, proper, when he gets into it, he can do, he can be a proper good wrestler, but he tones it down while he's being a heel. Very like Jericho. Like, the comparison, they're working together for a reason. He is very like Jericho in that I don't see his character changing up that much, even when he is a babyface, and we don't want him to. And if it was anyone else he was working with, I'd worry that they're going to make him come on. But like, that's not why we're cheering him now. You know, we're cheering him because he's a little shit. But that's what happens when Jericho turns babyface. He's still Jericho. You know what I mean? He's the exact same guy. He just does a little tiny, there's a twist on it. And that's probably going to be exactly how it pans out. Jericho is probably going to turn with him eventually. Maybe in the next couple of weeks, who knows? It's great storytelling. AEW are so good at this, like just like week by week, they just turn the screw another tiny, tiny bit. And then when something like this happens that's big and relevant, it feels big as a result. So really, really good stuff. And I'm looking forward to see where they go with it. You said it wasn't a massively remarkable show. I agree. There was one standout show from this week. We've already touched on it a little bit. So let's go in depth about the main show of the week. In at number one, NXT Vengeance Day.
Yeah, so I hadn't really been following NXT or anything the last while. Like, the last few takeovers, I wasn't really massively into. Like, I think even before the pandemic, like, the quality of the takeovers were starting to drop a little bit. So there wasn't that much buzz around them. But this one, it felt like a proper throwback takeover, like, where there were so many bangers on it. Like, do you remember those takeovers where you just couldn't pick, like, what your favorite match was just because everything was so good? Yeah. This was very, very close to that. So the first match I want to talk about is Gargano and Kushida. And, like, I think a lot of people have gotten sick of Johnny Gargano. But I think, well, this match in particular and, like, the last few months have really revitalized him. Like, his run with his stable, the way, is just rejuvenated him. Like, he's so good as a heel now. Like, I like his promos. Like, everything is so good. Kushida is another person as well. Like I remember he did OTT and, like, I was like, oh, this lad's unreal. Like, I didn't really follow him in New Japan or anything. But when he got to NXT, I was like, I don't really care about this lad that much. Like, he hasn't really done much. So this was, like, the first really breakout match for Kushida, in my opinion, on NXT. Because it was a really fast-paced match. And, like, some of the transitions and stuff they were doing was just, like, unbelievable. And what I really, really liked about this match as well is, so they had, like, the ramp set up, like, it was a solid ramp, but no padding or anything, or so they say. And it was up on, like, apron height. So, like, you could literally walk down the ramp and get straight into the ring, like, without climbing onto the apron. So what they did was they had Gargano hit his, like, springboard DDT on Kushida outside. But then he brought him in, hit him again in the ring, 1, 2, 3, finish. I love when moves like that are used as a finish because you don't see it that often. Like, that move is generally associated with a two count. Like, so I think it's so good that we got to see that because people were expecting either the Gargano escape or Kushida's finish to be the finish of it. But he finished it with the, well, quote unquote, transitional move that he would do in every other match, which I really, really liked. I forgot about this actually. Before the match, as Johnny Gargano was walking towards the curtain, he was walking with Austin Theory, Indy Hartwell, Candice LeRae. You see this lad in the back. I didn't register at first that it was Dexter Lumis. I was like, who's this lad just walking up? And I was like, oh no, my God, it's Dexter Lumis. And he just grabs Austin Theory. He has the chloroform in his hand and he just drags him off screen. And, like, I just pissed myself laughing. Like, it was done so quick. It was brilliant. Like, it's just,
was anything ever said again? Like, I don't think anyone referred to it afterwards, did they?
They did a thing where, like, they came out through the curtain, then they kind of looked around, and then everyone but Gargano, like, left and then came back, I think, kind of looking for him. It was so quick, and it was over in the blink of an eye, but it was a proper, like, I proper laughed out loud when I seen it. Like, I thought it was so good. And again, I'm not really into Dexter Lumis at all, but this 5 seconds that we've seen him on NXT TakeOver, just huge fan now.
It was his best moment by far. It was like forget about the rest. Like, this is it. Like, you should just debut that way. Like, if you debuted that way, I'd be going Dexter Lumis, guys, future champion.
So
amazing. So here's my experience of the match. I stayed up for this and I was glad I stayed up for this show. And I kind of was making jokes about it because, like, Kushida felt like at times, do you know when you, like, play a SmackDown game either for the first time or for the first time in years and you don't know the controls? So you just end up running at someone and doing, like, a running attack. Kushida kept doing head scissors every 2 seconds. Like, he just kept going for a head scissors. And it was like, it's legitimately like a SmackDown, watching a SmackDown match. He keeps going for head scissors. And like, he's not being successful with them. Like, so it's like a guy who just doesn't know how to play the game. And then there was another spot which I found like silly, but I laughed. Where they both kept going for each other's finish, but they kept ducking out, if that makes sense. And it's like, this is one of the things that like trainees try in a gym, but then like the older guy comes along and goes, that's stupid. Like, stop. That's not, it's not as cool as you think it is. Except like, no older guy came along and told them not to do this. Cause I hate those spots, cause they just make people look thick. You know what I mean? It's like, stop going for the thing that's not working. It's not cool. Like, and it just like, it just shows you're being stubborn and not the professional champion you should be. But like, the thing that made it remarkable was I tweeted that I'm like, look, I'm making jokes here, but I really enjoy these. I'm really enjoying these first two matches. They were like stupid, switch your brains off, fun matches. And that's what I liked about this card, because I felt like they were those kind of matches, but then the other matches were different. Do you know what I mean? The opening two matches were just intro matches where we're just going to do mad shit and we're just going to pop you a little bit and then we're going to get into the substance of it all. And it really set the tone nicely, because I'm like, all right, I'm awake. Like, you cannot say that I'm like not engaged in this TV, in this pay-per-view. So they had me where they want me. Like, even though there was, it was dumb, but it was dumb fun, and that's okay.
So next match was the finals for the Dusty Cup Classic. And it was MSK versus Grizzled Young Veterans. And MSK have only debuted like a few weeks ago, I think, in the Dusty Cup tournament. And like, there's not much else I can say about Grizzled Young Veterans. Like, Zach Gibson, like, I think Zach Gibson is one of the best they have in the company. Like, I know we haven't really seen much of him in the company, apart from like, he did the United Kingdom tournament, like the second one, I think it was. And that was probably the most we've seen out of him. And we've seen him like pop up again a few times, but like, he hasn't really tapped that potential that he can do, especially with this tag team. But like, even when he does a promo to the ring, like, he's still Zach Gibson that we know from like OTT and stuff. He's the exact same person. Yeah. That's what I love. He's not different in the slightest. He's just, he's the same person, just adapting to a new environment, which I love. But this match, like, I was never really a fan of the Rascals. Like, I liked their OTT match more than hype, but elsewhere, I wasn't really the biggest fan of them. But I really, really liked them in NXT as MSK, because, like, they're just highlighting them so well. Like, Wes Lee, who was formerly known as Desmond Xavier, he is ridiculously athletic. And it's not even done in a way where he's just doing move after move, move after move, like on the indies, but he's just highlighting everything perfectly. And as well, Nash Carter, formerly known as Zachary Wentz, like, he was really good in this as well, because he did a fire-up spot and it was just so much fire coming out of him. So, like, I was proper invested in this match. Like, I wanted Grizzled Young Veterans to win, but as it went on, I was kind of tipping more towards MSK. So they kind of, they worked me. By the end of it, like, I still wanted Grizzled Young Vets to win, but, like, more and more I was like, oh, like, if MSK win, like, I'll be happy. But they did win in the end, which I think was a really, really good way to like start them off strong in NXT, because now they're gonna have to have a tag title match, which is a great, great way to introduce them. And like, for Grizzled Young Veterans, like this loss doesn't hurt them in the slightest. It's the same way with Pete Dunne in the main event. Like, this loss does not hurt them at all. Like, if anything, like, they've gained more stock from this match just because of how much everyone was talking about it and everyone was praising it. But I personally loved this match. What about you, Rick?
What I liked about this was very similar to you. Like, I was like, I thought it was very strange to have Grizzled Young Vets go over a champion and Thatcher, because I was like when this is on Wednesday, when I saw like the qualifier, and I'm like, what? Why the Grizzled Young Vets? They haven't been involved. Like, you know, they've been in this tournament, and I know they won it last year, but like, and I know they haven't been involved because of the pandemic, like, so I don't hold it against them, but I'm just like, that's so random. But then when I watch this match, I'm like, that's why they're involved, because they're strong heels. They're not cool. They're not going to take away any shine from MSK. This is to build up MSK, and they did such a good job of that. Like, again, consider that And Dom, you appreciate this. You know, you've worked as a heel. Like, as much as you get behind a babyface in a match like this, half of that work is down to the heel, if not more. Yeah. A lot of the time it can be 70-80% of the work is down to how much you hate the heel, so that when a babyface fires up, it doesn't matter who he is. You just hate the heel and don't want him to win. So the Grizzly Young Vets contributed a lot to that, even though it's going to be MSK who get the headlines. That's the point. That's what they were in there to do. They were there to shine them up because NXT does need a tag team division. And now I'm fucking psyched. Think about how good MSK against Logan and Burch is going to be. Oh my fucking God. That's like a potential match of the year. And now all of a sudden we're thinking about NXT in a way that we were thinking about it 2-3 years ago. Do you know what I mean? Where it's like the tag team match is going to be class. The main event match is going to be class. The North American title division, that's class. The women's, but there's so many women around that like could fight for the belt. That's class. Everything seems hot now as a result of it. So really excellent booking, the way they presented it and the way they built it up. And the end result leaves us coming away hot with the entire product. Like an absolute win. Absolute win with this Dusty Classic Finals. Fantastic work from all involved and real teamwork as well. Do you know what I mean? Because the Grizzly Young Vets could have been like, they didn't have to work that hard and didn't have to shine them up as much as they did because it was coming at their expense. Again, I don't think it hurts them necessarily, but it's not them being involved in the program. And unfortunately, with the way things worked out, they didn't get to go on their big run after they won the Dusty Classic because the world ended. For them to come in and be so magnanimous and so giving and just make them look like $1 million, like they need to, so they can take over the tag division. It just makes it hotter though. Cause even when we saw the women's matches, like it was built on Toni Storm and Io Shirai's Mae Young Classic feud. So like if MSK win the belts, then the Grizzly Young Vets can be like, well, we feuded for that title. So we get a title shot. And then it's like, oh, there's actually history here. I remember that match, it was really good. And then boom, you've got another title match and it's just a rematch of this. So again, they've just created something out of nothing here, which is exactly the best case scenario for what you want from one of these tournaments. Excellent work by all involved.
Yep. So now we're going to talk about the main event, and this is a match I have a lot to say about, just because, like, it's Finn Balor versus Pete Dunne. Like, by itself, that's a very, very intriguing match. But I have to say, this was probably the most invested I've ever been into a match during this pandemic, apart from maybe the Royal Rumble. I'll say title match. So the most I've been invested in a title match. Best takeover main event in a good while, anyway.
Yeah.
But yeah, from start to finish, I would say I was just totally invested. Like, I'll tell you how I know this is a good match as well, because during it, I was just thinking, man, I really wish I was training right now doing this. Like, everyone in the group chat I was in as well was saying the exact same thing. Nice. Like, that's how you know the match was good.
Yeah.
But
you want to go out and, like, literally copy it.
Yeah.
Love it.
Like, at the start as well, like, they were working on, like, they did a lot of chain at the start as well. You had Finn Balor work the wrist lock on him. But they did something which you don't really see that much in WWE anymore. And they worked the wrist lock for a solid like 5 minutes, but they kept it engaging. They kept it dynamic because this is something that LJ Cleary and Michael May, they always like do sessions with us in training where we have to like work a wrist lock and try and find like different ways to keep it on, like without it being reversed, if you get me.
Yeah.
Like, for example, Pete Dunne, he kept doing monkey flips, he kept doing scoop slams and stuff, but he kept holding on to the wrist, so he never got out of it for like 4 to 5 minutes. And then when he finally did get out of it, it was just like a big oh shit moment. And then he took the head for a few minutes as well, and they worked that. Like, even that sort of stuff at the start I loved. And then like the more the match went on, the more physical, the more intense it got. And like, you had Pete Dunne targeting the fingers, and like, I know that's his thing, but in this match in particular, like, he absolutely nailed it. Like, the story they told was so good. Like I said, the start was so grounded, but the more it went on, it just like they were using everything. The false finishes as well. Like, I know we're kind of just so used to false finishes and stuff like that, but I think in this match, every false finish was believable. Like, he did the bitter end into Balor, reversed the bitter end into like a DDT, like a satellite DDT, and it looked sick. Like, Pete Dunne sold it like he was dead, and it was just so good. And as for the winner as well, like, I wasn't really expecting Pete Dunne to win it, but as it went on, I was like, okay, I could buy him winning. It's the same with the other match we were just talking about, the MSK match. Like, I could completely buy him winning, But Balor got the win, and yeah, it's just such a good match. Like, Balor is just like, he's delivering every single time he wrestles on NXT now. Like, I'm so into Finn Balor as well. Pete Dunne, like, Pete Dunne is someone, he's kind of like, he started off really strong with the United Kingdom tournament, then he won the belt, but he kind of like fizzled out a little bit. He wasn't on NXT for a while during the pandemic, which is understandable.
Yeah.
And then he came back with Oney Lorcan and Danny Burch, and he's completely rejuvenated now. So I'm really interested to see what's next for him, because I can see him winning that belt like a few months down the line, or maybe going up to the main roster. But I don't know. Like, and then they had the post-match angle, which we talked already about. I was very heartbroken about. It just ruined everything. It ruined the whole match for me. No, it didn't. This match was great. What do you think?
It was, yeah, it was fantastic. Because there's a thing, and there's a few things that worked here. So you talked about the fingers and how he did that. Do you know why that worked? Because we haven't seen him do that in so long. Do you know what I mean? Like, he utilized the fact that he had been away with the pandemic. And then he's like, oh yeah, this finger spot is sick. And then Finn just sold the shit out of it. So it worked. And now we're like, oh my God. And it was like, he did that in every match before he left. Like,
yeah.
But now we were just away from it for a while. And now it's all of a sudden this killer move. So no, it was really, really good. The lads went out. What I love about this match is just how high their stock is again, because there's no reason, but we were down on Pete Dunne. And I think part of that is just like people being down on Britress in general after the past year. And I think he just caught some residuals off that, even though he'd done nothing. He'd been accused of nothing. So, but I think it was just like, you remind me of a time in my life that now thinking back causes me pain. And like, but there was no reason for us not to just be like, oh no, Pete Dunne's class and he's never done it. And so it's fine. So like, and Balor's the exact same, that like, you just need a rebuild. But again, I think after the O'Reilly matches and a lot of what Balor's done over the past year, we're very much aware that this guy's having a world. Like, he's having a year that needs to now be spoken about, when you think of like Kenny Omega and Okada having that legendary year that they had a few years ago, and Roman Reigns last year. Like, he's having a wrestler of the year, you know. Yeah. And I think now we're kind of, enough eyes are being opened enough to his great work, and he's, consider that like, this wasn't part of the plan. None of this was the plan for Finn. So the plan for Finn was to go down to NXT. And I presume it was for him to main event the NXT UK Dublin show there. Still hasn't given me my refund.
Jesus.
Yeah, you owe me money, Vince. I haven't forgotten. I nearly did, but I haven't. But that was probably why he went to NXT. Like, it was just to help launch NXT UK in a tangential way and give him something to do on a temporary basis. He wasn't supposed to be the... Karrion Kross is supposed to be the NXT champion right now, according to, like...
That's true, yeah.
...their plans. And then think of how good this has been. And then when you look at, like, earlier on, we're talking about him, like, thinking about not doing a WrestleMania if it hurt NXT or took anything away from NXT. Like, again, I know we were kind of saying that, no, do the WrestleMania match, Finn. But at the same time, that shows how dedicated he is to this project. Do you know? And that's when Finn Balor is at his best, when he's locked in. You think of like when he was on the indies, coming up with different costumes and outfits and body paint every single week when he was on the indies, blowing things up. And he was just creatively locked in. And that's what we've been missing a little bit from Finn in WWE, maybe since kind of the demon gimmick kind of tapered off, and he just kind of settled into the mid card, and his match quality kind of followed it, where he was never bad. He doesn't have bad matches, but like, he wasn't having the classics that we know he can have. Whereas now he's fully locked in. He knows how good he is. He remembers like who the fuck he is, and he's showing it every week, and he's going out on the biggest scale possible and being the best wrestler in the world. And it's fucking awesome. And for NXT to be back and for us to feel this way about NXT again, we thought these days were over. You know what I mean? We were like, NXT, that was a thing that was cool. And like the Nia, my whole joke, WWE just ran it into the ground to where it's not cool anymore and no one cares about it, even though there's some good bits in it. Now, coming off this, we're like, NXT's fucking back. This is like, and look at what the top of Say Something Stupid was. Even New Japan doesn't have that kind of, you know, indie buzz anymore. That's going through a lull. Everything's going through a lull. AEW Dynamite can be very hit and miss sometimes. Not saying that it's not still hot. It is when it's at its peak. But like NXT now is like, oh no, we're fucking back and we're here to play. Mm. And regardless of if you like WWE, if you agree with a lot of their decisions, like with stuff like Speaking Out or Velveteen Dream and stuff like that, can we not just all agree that our wrestling experience is better when NXT is as good as this? It's nice to have it back. Welcome back, NXT. And thank you for coming back. We weren't sure. We were a bit worried there for a second, but we're glad to have you back in the mix because you made all of our weekends a lot better.
I'd actually want to see Edge and Finn Balor now. Like I didn't last week, but after seeing this match, I'm just thinking, imagine the match that Edge and Finn Balor could have at WrestleMania. Like, it also leaves Roman Reigns and McIntyre open to do their own things. So, like, I really want to see that now. And, like, I previously just wanted to see Edge and Reigns. Now I want to see both of them. Like, I don't know what direction they're going to go.
If they had...
They could do it now.
And we're going to talk about that when we talk about Elimination Chamber. If they had Edge against... Imagine they booked it as, like, if they were having a takeover before Mania, or even if they did, like, a big match on the Wednesday before Mania. Imagine they had, like, Edge against the NXT champion, and it's Finn Balor against Adam Cole. So, like, a few days beforehand, you still weren't sure if it was Finn Balor, you know? Mm. That'd be an interesting way of doing it. But, like, Edge is coming off this going, nah, NXT's the best. So, you know what? Let's get into our WrestleMania fantasy booking, because let's talk about Elimination Chamber. It's this weekend. We might be able to figure out where this is going. So, we'll start with the Elimination Chamber. Only four matches announced, but we still have SmackDown to go. So, no doubt there'll be more added as we go on. Prediction League, by the way, going to be up on Facebook. NXT, by the way, and as much we're going on about it, and this perhaps tells a story, because I mean everything I said. It was the most predictable show of the year so far. By a distance, it was 44% predictable based off our predictability scale with the Prediction League. But again, predictable doesn't necessarily mean bad either. It was a fantastic show. But just for any stats nerds like me who are interested in that kind of stuff, the Prediction League will be back this Friday for Elimination Chamber. Still wide open. Even if you haven't entered, there's still loads of time to go. It's a brand new league, so get involved. First up, we want to talk about Asuka against Lacey Evans. So the story here is Lacey Evans is pregnant, and she quit out of her match with Charlotte during the week because she didn't want to be touched. Now she's going to be in a women's championship match. Do you think that this could be, I don't know, like if this is even going to be a match, but like, do you think that this, I think obviously the pregnancy thing is probably mind games. Like, I think that's fairly certain. Like, and it could, like the other shoe could drop this weekend. I think none of us would be surprised if that's the way they went, and Lacey ended up getting a cheap win. Do you think that they could be going for Lacey against Charlotte at WrestleMania for the belt?
See, that's what I was initially thinking, but I don't know how true this is, but I read online that she actually is pregnant. Obviously, Ric Flair isn't the real father, but I don't know if that's just like, that could be like a fake rumor that we are throwing out into the mix. So we won't know until Sunday, really, but if it is a fake rumor, yeah, I think that's the direction they're going to go. Lacey Evans as champ versus Charlotte at Mania. Otherwise, I have no idea.
So shit for Asuka if that happens.
Yeah.
Like, she has carried this division for the past year. Like, I would feel devastated for Asuka if she was just, like, putting a random Mania, like, or the Women's Battle Royal or something like that. Think about Money in the Bank. She took the belt off Becky and, like, ended up, she was the best person during the early pandemic no crowd stage, no Thunderdome stage, when it was literally just the sound of silence and then Asuka scream. That's what Raw was for the first few weeks of the pandemic. She has had a year, and WWE owes her. Please, WWE, if anyone is listening there, like, no. there's no reason for Lacey to be in this match, like, for fuck's sake. I hope it's just like, yeah, they do a gimmicky finish here and Asuka gets to hold on to it. Maybe Charlotte turns on Asuka and Charlotte Asuka is a WrestleMania rematch or something like that. I'd be more into that. It'd be a better match than having Lacey involved. There's no reason to get Lacey involved, please. I'm picking Asuka. I'm picking head over heart here, but I don't feel good about it. Dom, who are you going with?
I'm just going to go Asuka, you know. Like, like you said, like, she's had such a good year. I feel like if Lacey Evans won the belt just for the sake of a feud with Charlotte, like, they knew that feud anyway. Like, I think it'd just be, I don't know, like, it just completely shits on the year she's had. They can still do that match and they can have Asuka versus someone else, or they can have Charlotte cost Lacey Evans the match.
Yeah.
That's what I hope they do.
Yeah. Like, fingers crossed. Like, you have your little Charlotte Lacey match if you want. Asuka against Rhea Ripley. There you go. Rhea hasn't got a Mania match sorted yet. There's a fucking tasty match.
That's a big one.
Yeah, so let's go that way. Like, let's put this right. If you want a stupid Charlotte storyline, fine, but we get Asuka Rhea as a payoff. One for you, Vince, one for us. That's fair, I think. Especially since we're the ones paying. Where's my fucking refunds? Dad says he got his refund.
Just get delayed for the next 10 years.
Yeah, this is it. One day when I'm 80, I'm like, well, I guess we finally made it here. United States Championship on the line. Bobby Lashley defends against Riddle and Keith Lee in a match that I feel a year ago would have got a lot more buzz, but Riddle is in it. It's one of these things that it could be a great match. Keith Lee is back, obviously. I think he had a bout of COVID, but also congratulations to him. He got engaged to Mia Yim this week, so nice. Big week for him. Do you think that maybe him winning the US Championship could be something that'd be good going into WrestleMania? Like, do you think that he's kind of there? For me, I'm probably going to go with Keith Lee because I think he's lost a lot of momentum. Give him a belt now. Keith Lee against Lashley is an awesome Mania match. I'd be well up for that. But where do you see this falling, Dom?
See, I was thinking Lashley because he's been on such a run lately. Like he's just unstoppable, really. But like you were saying, like, Keith Lee, like, needs something like this, I think. With Lashley, if Riddle or Keith Lee don't beat him, I don't know who will, if that makes any sense.
Yeah.
So I think I'm going to go with Keith Lee as well. And then Lashley can chase him.
Dan's a good prediction. Jimmy, I wasn't asking you for the refund. You're fine. I wouldn't do that on my podcast. That'd be very passive aggressive of me. Dan says take triple threat is a good way to take the belt off Lashley. So you can have Keith Lee pin Riddle. And that's a way to set up Keith Lee. I feel confident in that pick now, actually. That's a really good shout there.
Yeah, that's a good shout.
Let's get into the big matches. And this is where our WrestleMania fantasy booking kicks off. Because you can definitely make a case that they're going to build two WrestleMania matches out of the people involved in these matches. Drew McIntyre in the WWE Championship match defends against Randy Orton, AJ Styles, Jeff Hardy, Kofi Kingston now replacing The Miz, and Sheamus. Sheamus cut a heated promo on Raw Talk. It wasn't his best promo ever, I'm not going to lie. They put it up on YouTube, and he was kind of attempting to do a Miz, but it's like one of those things where, again, I'm going to bring it back to a trainee comparison. Do you ever see a trainee cut a wrestling promo and they just keep talking because they don't know where to end? And they just keep using wrestling cliches and they're like, I'm the top of the mountain and I'm going to kill you. And then that gold deserves to be around my waist. And where were you? Where were you, Drew? Yeah, where were you? You weren't thinking of me. And I'm the king dog of the alpha fields, Drew. I'm going to beat you at WrestleMania. And this should be a WrestleMania match. And it's like, I'm not having a go at Sheamus. I'd be psyched to see Sheamus against Drew at a WrestleMania. That'd be awesome. Literally validation for a match that I used to fucking referee. Like, so I'd mark the fuck out personally for that. But again, it was him trying to do a Miz on Talking Smack, and he's just not the Miz. So it was awkward. But you could easily see this match being a build up for that, or you could see the Miz getting involved. What way do you see this panning out, though?
I don't think they're going to crown a new champion in this. I think McIntyre is going to take it, but there's they're still going to do McIntyre and Sheamus going into Fastlane, at least, I'd say. So, yeah, I don't think Sheamus is going to win, but I definitely think the feud's going to continue. So let's have a look who else is in this. Kofi's definitely not winning. Orton will probably get screwed over by The Fiend. That's what I think anyway.
Yeah.
Or Alexa Bliss. Yeah. Styles is a bit of a wild card, though. Styles and McIntyre. Has that already happened, Styles and McIntyre? For the belt?
No, but they'd be an awesome match.
Oh, it happened at TLC, but The Miz cashed in, didn't he?
Yes, good show, yeah.
So they could have a singles match then out of it. Jeff Hardy, definitely not. So, yeah, I think Styles and McIntyre is the only two options. So I'm going to go with McIntyre then, because I don't see them taking the belt off. Not here, anyway.
How do you keep Sheamus hot? Like, they booked themselves into a hole here, I fear, because... Yeah. How do you keep Sheamus hot for a Fastlane match? And I think that's a very, very good shout of it being at least Fastlane. But how do you keep him hot in this match, like without and have McIntyre win? Because I agree, I don't see a title switch happening here. It could. It wouldn't shock me if Sheamus ended up winning here and then Drew won it back at Fastlane. Wouldn't be like the end of the world for anyone, and then to keep it going. But I don't see how you book it in a way. Because it's Elimination Chamber. You can't get disqualified. You can't get counted out. You can't. There's no way other than Drew winning and then Sheamus getting angry again on Raw and just doing a Kevin Owens on it and just going, nah, we're going to run it back. We're going to do it again. So I don't know. It's an interesting one. I'm also going to go for McIntyre, but it's one of these where keep an eye because as I start to get deeper into the week and especially once I watch SmackDown, The wheel, I know it's a Raw feud, but like the wheels of my brain might start turning more as the week goes on. But I'm tentatively picking Drew here. Very interesting one though. And I love that shout about Sheamus at Fastlane. I think that's a good shout. In the SmackDown chamber, you have Kevin Owens, Daniel Bryan, Cesaro, Jey Uso, King Corbin, and Sami Zayn. The winner fights Roman Reigns on the night. This is something that you could easily turn into a WrestleMania feud because it's like Reigns comes out straight afterwards. Daniel Bryan, I'd say, is a really good show for this match because he's on his last legs and he's just like selling up Reigns, spear, 1, 2, 3. And it's like, that's not fair. That's not a real title match. You can easily spin it that way. And I think that's, if I was a betting man, I'd say I've just talked my way into that prediction. I feel that's pretty likely. But how do you feel this is going to go? Is this got KO Reigns 72 written all over for you?
I hope not. I have one prediction, but it could be either Cesaro or Daniel Bryan. I think one of them is going to start off from one in the Elimination Chamber. They'll be the first in the ring, maybe together, both of them together. That'd be a good way to start it, actually. I think they're going to go the whole way. Whoever is winning, that is, they're going to go the whole way. They're going to win. And then they're going to have like a 10 to 12 minute match at Reigns. Like not a quick fire match, like you were saying, like he comes in, eats a spear. I think it'll literally be like the bell rings. He goes for a spear and then like, he'll kick him or something. Like say if it's Brian, he'll hit him a kick, go for the yes lock or something. It'll be a quick enough match, but he'll show a lot of like fire and stuff in it.
Yeah.
Like it won't be over straight away. I want to see Cesaro do that, but I think they're going to go with Brian because that's more of a safe bet. But I think if you're being really safe, they're probably just going to go with Kevin Owens, but I think they're going to go with Brian here. Just because like Kevin Owens and Reigns in the singles matches, like I said last week, like, it's just underwhelming if he wins.
I can't do this again. I can't. And it's grand. Like, everything you've done has been entertaining, but I cannot sit through this again.
Yeah. Or how about this as well? Say Cesaro wins, and then Seth Rollins costs him the belt.
Ooh.
Shield
reunion.
That'd be interesting. Oh, then a fast lane, you can have Cesaro and Bryan versus The Shield.
Ooh.
Or 2/3 of The Shield.
Yeah, I haven't actually thought about Rollins being in Reigns' world yet. That's something that we haven't got any kind of... They haven't crossed paths yet. Oh!
That'd be very interesting.
Oh, I like that.
I think I'm talking myself into Cesaro winning it, but...
Here's the thing, right? I think we like Cesaro, and we want him to be a thing, so we imagine him to be a bigger thing than he actually is in real life.
See,
and at the Rumble, I kind of learned that. Now. when we were talking ourselves into him winning the Rumble, and then like to see how he actually went out in the Rumble, I'm like, oh yeah, Cesaro's still Cesaro to WWE. He's not like, Cesaro's deadly. That's just like us, like me and my mates getting around chatting about wrestling and getting really excited, but that's not what's actually happening.
I think they're going to go with Brian, because say if Edge doesn't pick Reigns, I think that's the match they're going to go with, Brian versus Reigns. So if they're going to start that feud, then there's no better time than this match. Like, he really brings the fight to Reigns, so it's not like a quick spear finish and then that's it, he's moving on. I think Brian for this one. But it's still, it's kind of open for me.
Make that Fastlane match a six-man. So Brian, Cesaro, and KO against Rollins, Reigns, and Jey Uso.
So, yeah.
Yeah, there you go. And then, like, kind of the Shield against the Wyatt family, just do a mental six-man. Like, it'd be absolutely class, like fucking tornado rules. So what are we thinking WrestleMania main event-wise? Are we thinking... Okay, look, like, because you can talk yourself very easily into there's, you know, one is Reigns against Bryan, the other is Drew against Sheamus, and the other is Balor against Edge. That's us talking ourselves into there. Like, can you hear it?
Yeah, I don't think they'll go with Edge and Balor, but like, that's just judging from that takeover main event, like how I kind of want to see it now.
Yeah.
They could do it, but I don't think they will. Mm. I do think it's going to be Reigns and Edge. But I don't know. It's so open. That's the thing. It's the most open road to WrestleMania in years, I think.
Jimmy wants to see Sheamus cut a really angry promo on Rangers win the league on Paddy's Day, pissing off Drew. Interesting. I like it. I'm into it. And it could absolutely happen as well with where they're going.
They could still do Bryan versus Reigns just a fast lane instead of Mania. Like, they could Reigns build edge on that for the next month.
Yeah. I think Drew and Shane, both of them have enough legs to go to WrestleMania. But yeah, I agree. They probably aren't going to do Balor Edge. That's us getting worked up based off promo that was just to highlight the takeover that was coming up. So Reigns Edge of the two is the one I'd like to see more. And Drew Sheamus is a good match anyway. So
yeah.
Loads to be interested in, though, and loads of time as well to sell some whatever they have planned. If there is a plan, who knows? But we'll be back next week to break it all down. Katie Harvey rejoining us. She won't be. She's fired. Until then, check out Play the Elimination Chamber Prediction League if you're joining in on that on Facebook. That will be up on Friday from midday. We will be tweeting for Elimination Chamber on Sunday. As long as I don't fall asleep, it's known to happen. I'm an old man at this stage. And in the meantime, if you haven't already, make sure you listen to the latest Yup the Tuck or Nash podcast. If you haven't got your Rick and Dom, Lads, Phil, check that out. Also, we have a surprise coming up in lieu of an Ask Low Blows on Friday. Something I've wanted to do for quite a while. And the only hint that I've given and will give, and I'm quite enjoying how much this is worrying him. This is Justy's worst nightmare, is all that I'll say. That is coming up on Friday. Check that out. In the meantime, enjoy Elimination Chamber. Thank you to Dom Tuck. We will be back next week. But in the meantime, for Dom Tuck, I've been Rick Nash, and that's the bottom line, because Loblo said so.